UAC, September 12th, 2018.
So whose turn to be secretary tonight?
Emily.
Okay,
we're
in.
Alright, thank you.
Thank you for volunteering.
Okay, so let's talk about what we're going to do tonight. Some people want to leave it. Barry needs to leave at 6:30 to go to the adjacent meeting. I know Steve and others may be interested in going. The most important thing is to keep going on the rate structure deal with Chris. So he's here. In addition, Doug, item four, Doug Schultz is likely not going to come, but Barry can get.
He's at another meeting across the hall.
He's at another meeting. We do have the ethics guy, committee chair. I guess he's chair. He's supposed to come here as a briefing. We're all sort of tired of hearing this, since we've done it annually.
That we can't talk to more than two people at once?
That's right.
Right. Okay.
Don't talk to.
You can't talk to you.
So we're going
to.
He's a committee volunteer just like we are, so he's, you know, he's coming. I'd like to put him at the end after Barry leaves, because Barry doesn't have to report. Hang around for that. Plus, we need to have a left chair, chair or chairs at some point.
Yeah,
sooner or later.
Andy and I are.
So, did anyone want to do anything else? Good, we're going to jump. We're going to go right on and deal with the meeting notes and then get ready to Chris. Here we are.
Mm-hmm.
We have an acceptance of the meeting notes.
Oh, got to read this.
It's a long one. I just wanted to get everything down that Doug Schultz said before he goes.
Because she writes more than others. But that's what they do.
And I thought I was a windbag.
Oh, no. I win. It's part of the Irish heritage.
As usual, she prepared something to me. I made, like, a few minor changes to it.
I'll move.
You can, there's a motion to approve it.
Second. I'll second it.
Second, any comment? All in favor of the motion to approve the notes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. Public comment, none. We're going to zip right on to item 8, rate structure. As you remember last time, we had a bunch of things we commented on and we wanted to get into the CIP to understand a little more as well. So how do you guys want to enlighten us?
Well, he doesn't have any updated CIP numbers. I sent you that report that we just got last week and it's still in draft, but it's relevant, obviously, because it has some pretty big numbers in there. Really big
huge numbers.
Yeah, so bigger than I even put in the CIP. But it's not really finalized yet, so... my initial thoughts on that is if we really have like a $6 million project, then that's $2 million more than what's in there for that project, which probably would have cause us to have to bump out the water treatment project in the out years to try to get out of the 6-year window. So that would kind of keep it a little bit almost revenue neutral for this study at least.
But is that a good goal?
Yeah, well, for now, I think it doesn't have to be a that goal.
So perhaps we could run through this stuff, and then you could maybe pull up this
quickly,
and we could all kind of take a look at it and see what it means to us.
At least we can understand what the consultant is saying, and we're not done talking to him yet about, we still have some questions on what they gave us, and whether we need to do all that or not, but... Mm-hmm. That's what we have. Anyway, okay, so it's up there, ready to go. Just click on it.
There
you go.
All right. So, hold on, I think it's that one. Okay. All right. So, figured we'd just kind of discuss the updated findings and results. I mean, analytically, the most significant change was that I incorporated the updated SPFs in both utility revenue requirements and basically let that run through and affect the funding. We'll go over the revenue requirement findings, cost service findings, and then the rate structure alternatives, which are very similar but slightly different from what I showed you last time. And then we can talk about questions, or we can do that along the way. Just a quick recap on the SPFs. The direction that we got last time was to proceed with the average cost one. So that would be a total of $5,970 per meter equivalent for the water SPF. And the sewer one, it would be based on area. So Winslow would get both collection and treatment, so they would pay $81.43 per ERU. The South Island sewer area would only pay the collection one, which is $37.30 per ERU, but then they also pay the sewer district charges on top of that. And for the purpose of the analysis, I assume that we just went to those in 2019. It seemed like the consensus, at least as I understood it, was you guys were okay just making that change as long as it's been since they've been updated.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though, if I can digress. Mm-hmm. That means that a developer of a development in South Island only pays $37.30, and the buyer of the home pays for treatment out of their rates.
Really?
No. They pay $37.30 to us.
They pay to the sewer district.
No, they pay $10,000 to the sewer district, $10,300 for treatment.
Yeah, on the next slide here, actually, So the South Island sewer, if they are on a property that paid ULID assessments, they pay $1,600 to the sewer district. Otherwise, if they have a reservation number, it's $8,720, and if not, the $10,330.
Wait, where is that?
That's in the note one, underneath the chart.
Okay.
Yeah. So they would pay the $37.30 to the city plus that. And right now they're currently paying that, but nothing to the city.
And so that being?
That being note one, the charges. So if they paid ULID assessment, $1,600. If they didn't, but they have a reservation number, $8,720. And if they don't have a reservation number, then $10,330.
Okay. So that's their buy-in.
So it's almost $14,000. If you're coming in as a new property that wasn't part of any of the LIDs, you're paying $14,000.
And who's paying it? The developer? Or
that's just sewer, because that doesn't include PUD water. That's a different
thing. Well, so just to be... So the sewer is... They would pay $10,000.
To the district.
To the sewer district. And then $37.30 to you. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And typically, developers pay those charges up front.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So the developer pays a lot more if he's developing in the south end of the island. Yeah. On that $10,000, and we were only charging $5,000 or something. Was that what
Right now? The existing SPF. I don't think I have that.
It is. It was $59.90 something.
Yeah, combining water and sewer, I think.
Well, they paid Service District 7, which obviously built the plant.
So
they've raised their connection charges to $10,000 and some, and that's just straight pass-through from us. We just pass through those fees. They charge them.
So we're charging a whole lot less for new connections.
What do you mean?
Our
Winslow system.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
I don't know. I don't know why theirs are so high. This is why ours are. But
so the net effect of that is it encourages development out of the south and into Winslow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before we get too excited, I'll show you the SPF survey. I actually had a chance to make a graphic this time. As opposed to doing research while you guys are talking about other things. So if you look at the top, Bainbridge Island Winslow, they would pay the full, for a 3/4-inch single family connection, would pay the full water and the full sewer charge. So they'd be at $14,113. Under the proposed charges. And so then the sewer, the South Island customers would pay, they pay the full water, the Rockaway Beach would pay the full water SPF, and they would pay the collection portion, the $37.30, and then you'd add the the sewer district charge. So actually, I guess if you added the 10,000 to that, 19,700 versus 14,000. So it is about a $5,000 difference.
Are we charging enough?
Well, that's what this
does. Well, yeah.
It's charged based on what you're costing.
What the costs are, because it's the participation in the existing. Or
so that's something to consider. Is the KPUD charging what its costs are?
The KPUD, it charges $5,000.
It's charging more. So is it only charging what its costs are? Why are its costs higher than ours?
Not KPUD. You're talking in Sewer District 7.
Sewer District 7.
Yeah.
Who owns Sewer District 7?
It's a private.
It's a governmental
agency. She used to be on the board, but.
Say that again.
Sewer District 7.
Is it a nonprofit?
No, it's a new publicly elect commissioners. Yeah. It's like KPUD. It's a
public.
It's
a Title IX D7 water system.
It's a nonprofit.
Cost based rates.
And is it because it's small?
It's a public utility.
It's a public utility. Yeah. Just to be clear, it's a public governmental utility.
Mm-hmm. But does it cost more because it's a smaller?
No, probably.
Economies of scale.
So you have the 2018 numbers and the 2019 for Winslow.
And
is that proposed?
The 2019 would be proposed. So that would be the average cost SPFs for Winslow. And then kind of in the middle of the group, there's Bainbridge, Island Rockaway, and South Island Sewer. I didn't add the sewer district charges to that in the chart, but I know that they apply below.
So what this effectively
varies, unless I put three.
What effectively is that the development costs for the in Winslow are going to be doubled from 7,000 to 14,000.
Mm-hmm. Which is still cheaper than what they're paying elsewhere. So that's
It all varies what the system's cost.
But I mean, that's our message. It's a lot less than other places.
Well, we charge connection fees on top of that.
What's that?
We charge connection fees on top?
Yeah, the connection fees are kind of minor fees, either to inspect or to place a meter or whatever it is.
And everybody does.
Yeah, this doesn't include any of those charges. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're kind of minor compared to this.
They're usually minor.
You know, the interesting thing about these unlike rates is who's impacted, who cares passionately about this, am I correct, is the developers versus the rates where it's the voters, homeowners.
Except for like the single family person who's building a house on an empty lot, the one-offs. They're paying the rate too.
That
I see. Oh yeah, so of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That lot next to you, if somebody ever connects, they got to pay this. Mm-hmm. So when this goes before the city council, the development community is going to come and say, you're doubling our rates, you're trying to make housing more expensive, because it's an affordability issue.
But we're also keeping the rates down for the general sewage and getting
it in line.
We're
trying to do our best. It's hard to tell people different things. This is climbing the system. You want to be there so you can see the screen, Charlie?
Yeah. Now we're going to move.
Yeah.
While you were here, Charlie, we just all agreed to double the connection charges. You'd have been here.
So we are now going to recommend that, right?
Well, that's we haven't finalized that.
This is where we're headed.
This is where we're headed. And it's just to be, I want everybody to be, this is buying into the system, the pipes and pumps that are there, as opposed to paying your monthly rates.
Right.
And is this meant to cover some sort of deficit, like?
So what this is it's based on a definition of an equitable share of buying into the system, and that definition we just updated. It hasn't been updated for a long time, which is why it's increasing so much.
Yeah. Okay. What's the value of the system that the SPF is based on for, say, the water?
Yeah. So I don't have a dollar figure on top of my head, but basically it's the cost of your existing assets and the cost of your capital projects.
I think that was like $25 million or so divided by the 7,000 possible connections or something like that is how the
existing and
future. And I don't know if this is something to blow very much, but you effectively own it in the way in which you own the assets of this community. Versus if it was a private sewer system or a private water system, so that's You're paying a lot of money, but you're
go even further. We all own it. We're now selling pieces of it to new people coming in.
And they become owners.
And that's the hard part. What versus where of a new guy to pay for what exists versus what's being put in because of him and then the people after him.
But the tricky part about that is the stuff that's in the ground was oversized to meet those future demands. So so if we didn't have to meet the new demands, the stuff could be smaller and it would have been cheaper.
And that's why the cost that they're buying in is the current cost and the projected cost over the next 10 years. Mm-hmm.
And that's where the argument always is, too. Is why didn't you oversize more last time? Why
are we doing it again? If it feels any better, you're sort of like you're not renting. If it was private, you'd be paying, somebody else would provide the capital, but you'd be paying your 9% return on investment or something, and you'd be renting.
Yeah.
So over time, this is a good deal.
Right. We're not looking to line anybody's pockets, basically. Nobody else is getting the money.
Every good thing that happens to it belongs to us.
We want to make sure they pay their fair share because we don't want to be over-encouraging development by making it super cheap as it has been in the past.
And since this hasn't been updated for 20 years, they've been underpaying.
Developers have been underpaying.
This is a doubling.
That's not a
if you tried to ramp in that doubling, you would be saying, let's have, you would be encouraging rapid
Right,
all right. We need to keep going here. Charlie, we've got till 6:30, at least for Barry. So,
okay.
So we're trying to do the stuff first.
So then that was basically it for the SPFs. The revenue requirements, kind of the questions we've been discussing is how should we adjust rates? Should we do moderate annual increases or sort of more periodic adjustments? I think that we had agreed sort of the moderate increases was the way to go. And then the level of rate-funded system reinvestment that would be appropriate. I actually ran a couple of scenarios here for water. One of the questions was, with the updated SPFs, how much more capacity does that get us to reach the 90% of depreciation funding by 2024? Surprisingly, it doesn't buy the water utility a whole lot. We were at 45% last time, and it got up to 48%. And part of that is because 2024 was really kind of the tight year, and actually I'll show you in another couple of slides in terms of the fund balance. So we can do a little bit more capital than we could before, but you wouldn't really start seeing a benefit until after 2024 when you actually start having some cash capacity.
So it went up from
45% to 48% under the 4% increases in the top table.
Or 35% to
48%? What we had said was last time we were starting at 30%, I think it was, and we were getting to 45% by 2024. And so we were able to get the 2024 funding level up to 48% from 45%, but we were able to start a little bit higher too at 35% instead of 30%. And that's all under the 4% increases. If we wanted to match the sewer utilities in depreciation funding percentages, you would need 6% annual rate increases.
Oh, for water.
For water, yeah. So, I mean, and there's nothing that says that you have to match it. I mean, it's really, you know, one utility may have better capacity to take that funding on at any particular time.
Are you still using the $2.2 million as your debt figure for 2024?
As far as the amount of debt we had to issue? No, I actually decreased that because of the additional SPF revenue. That was one of the changes that I could make.
Mm-hmm. So this is the numbers with putting in the additional revenue.
Yeah. So that decreases, I think it was 1.4. We decreased it a bit from the 2.2.
So you dropped $800,000 in debt.
Mm-hmm. Because you had cash from the SPFs.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Good. But that's another reason why the 45 only went up to 48. But
you don't have any kind of like number for debt per ERU as being a reasonable number on a water system, do you?
No, because it really varies. I mean, there are utilities that don't want any debt on the books, and they just set all their rates on a pay-as-you-go basis. What happens is there are large periods of time where they have the highest rates, but then once everybody else catches up, they have the lowest rates long term because they don't have to pay the interest and things like that. Mm-hmm. As far as debt indebtedness, I mean, there are prudent levels of debt. So, you know, I think if you're 60 or 70% of assets, you know, in terms of your outstanding debt principal, that's too high. So yeah, I mean, and the other thing is, the more debt you get, then you, depending on the type of debt you have, reserves you have to maintain, coverage you have to cover standards that you have to meet as well.
Right. I think I was doing some back of the envelope numbers that suggested that if we use ERUs, and I don't know if that's the right number to use, that, that we're talking about $2 a month per $1 million of debt per ERU.
Okay.
Just for everybody to get. So if we had to go out and borrow $2 million or $4 million, you can figure that as $2 a month per each million, we'd have to raise rates to cover it.
And if the interest rates go up, which...
Yeah, it's
going to affect that. Right. And the thing I was noticing, too, is that if you just go up 4%, you're paying, what, 84 cents more than the prior year. If you go up 6%, you're paying $1.26 from the prior year. Is that true? Like, I'm looking at 2020.
Yeah, so I mean, it also keep in mind, compared to 2019. So what happens is those 6% are, they're stacking on each other, so you're getting a larger percent of a number that's already larger.
Okay.
But yeah.
So like next year, it's 77 cents more versus $1.22 more. And your rate is still at 20. So next year it would cost $20.96 for the average person to pay, which the lowest I can pay in Meadowmere is $31 a month. That's the lowest. Even if I don't use my water, that's the bottom rate. So this rate is still lower than Meadowmere's, which I got to believe is one of the lower ABs. So, you know, we could get 90%. And be lower than everybody else's water rates still.
Well, it's KPD's 48 every month, so that's 24 is the base.
Is the base.
24? Yeah. Is that the smallest you can do at KPD is $24 a month?
Yeah.
Yeah, here we are.
And that's
significantly
base
below
plus
that.
7 CCF.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So our base is, well, you don't show the base all the way out. But
okay.
Right. Yeah.
So that's something to consider. We're comparing it to other water systems.
So the 90%, once you get 90%, we don't continue to add.
We will to 100%, but I want to say so sewer gets to 100% in 2025, and then water. If we stick to the 4%, we would get to full funding by 2030. If we do the 6% per year, we get to there in 2025 as well.
So. I just wonder why we don't slow that down. Since the sewer rates are so high anyhow, why are we going to 90%? When we haven't had any, why are we going to 90% in 5 years?
Well, in theory, you'd reach a point where you paid off debt and now you'd be collecting a whole lot of money because now what was going to debt retirement, which was $1.2 million a year, is no longer going to debt retirement, just go into the reserve.
Right. So maybe we want to go to 6% on the water and lower on the sewer.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the sewer rates are high, the water rates are low.
Exactly.
If we don't have this depreciation fund at all now.
Yes.
Why are we doing 90% in 5 years? I don't get that.
Yeah. So just another question that came up last time was projected cash balances. So we'll look at water first, and I actually showed both scenarios, and you can see the lighter bars on the right are the alternate scenario where we do the 6% increases.
Right.
And you can see that there's some more cash, but it's not, we're not amassing a big amount of money. And by 2024, you see how that's the critical year for fund balance. I mean, the dashed line at the bottom represents the target balances, and we are... getting really close to
and that goes to the CIP we're talking about because we're having a big projects in 2024.
Yeah.
If we don't do that, or it gets spread, we're not.
But this is based on the projections that we have at our disposal.
Right.
Okay. And then sewer, there's a little more slack, but not a tremendous amount. I mean, we've got a few $100,000 above that. So, I mean, maybe we could make some of the increases lower. But I would say, though, if we were to take the threes and cut them to 2.5s, for example, there's a compounding effect in the amount of cash. So I can play around with that and see how low we could get it.
But we're starting at $5 million.
Yeah, that's if we spend all the money in 18 that we think we're going to spend.
These are projected, end of the year.
And we just declined the award contract last night, so we're not going to spend some of that, probably. But anyway, but we're going to spend it eventually.
So, but I sit here and say, if we don't have it at all, why do we have to get there in 5 years? Why isn't it 10 years or 7 years or 8 years? I mean, what?
Yeah. So,
what's
so
the magic?
So,
the
so there is. So there is no magic. In part, I mean, I did set that because we have a certain amount of cash that we need to have to pay for projects, and so you can see here there is some room to adjust that. I don't know off the top of my head exactly how far. I mean, I can pull out the model and figure it out. I mean, you may be able to lower some of those increases to like 2.5 or something. But yeah, I mean, really, that's going to be what drives the what the increases have to be. And it just so happens that you're funding, say, 90% of depreciation by 2024. But that's part of just the cash that you need to generate to pay for the projects.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But as surprise sewer expense could be $1 million main repair on the beach.
Right? Yeah, and so I mean, it would be ideal if in the long term you weren't right at the minimum balance, you had some cushion. So
that was a big. That was three different lines, and that was $2 million. So okay. I can't see how we'd ever spend $1 million.
Yeah, but in that same period from 2018 to 2024, you're reducing long term debt by about $8 million.
Right. And that 2024 number, that includes the depreciation money as well, right? Or is that in a separate account?
No, that, this is total combined operating capital fund balance. Okay. So that would be everything.
So, yeah, so I'm kind of agreeing with you, Andy, that we could slow down that pace to not get to 90% by 2024.
So I'm kind of leaning towards 6% water increase, 2.5% sewer.
Well, what? Can they just ask why 2.5%? I know.
Because, mentioned yes. Right? Well, that's where I was going to.
Why not two?
Or
one?
Because if that's one going five. To affect
well,
it
let's
a lot.
Let's see what it looks like.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We don't need to answer that today.
Yeah.
The concept is...
Off the top of your head.
Yeah.
So, but that would say, okay, you want to shoot for two or 1.5 or one. Mm-hmm. Then you would be able to come back and say, well, that's going to get you to 60% depreciation.
Right. Comparable to what
yeah.
the water
and,
is.
And really, I would say the 90% mm-hmm. right now is more of an outcome based on the rate increases that we set, based on the cash that we needed for capital.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't make any promises that we're going to materially, like dropping it to 40% or something, then you're going to have to issue debt if you don't have the cash on hand, mm-hmm. which may be okay if you're... retiring debt and
right. And right. Jeff keeps reminding us.
Replacing
he's exactly right.
Just
if you have it. A $3 million project that comes out of nowhere, you can float a bond issue for it. Because
mm-hmm.
if the debt's gone,
right, you're reducing your debt level of $1.2 million, which is fast, which is more than full depreciation level
yeah.
at $900,000.
Yeah.
So you're actually putting more money into the system than fully funding depreciation, but it's all going to debt reduction.
Right.
Mm.
And that's all creating future borrowing power. I mean, it's not maybe the ideal situation, but
mm-hmm.
You can't ignore that that's creating room to fund future projects through debt.
Needless to say, I mean, we can play around with that, and if debt is an option out there, if we can slow some of that down. So that was it on revenue requirements. Now to the cost of service analysis, really the question is, should we phase the cost shifts in over time? And just as a recap, we found that in general, single-family homes in Winslow were underpaying and all the other classes were overpaying.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we had talked about originally was the kind of phase approach of we freeze everyone's rates and then we increase the Winslow single-family rates by 8%. It sounded like there was interest in seeing a scenario where we did some increase to everybody else. And so I said, let's do 2%. That's the inflation rate we're assuming. So if we give everybody except Winslow single-family an inflationary rate adjustment, Winslow's rates could go up 6% instead of 8%. And that would get you the aggregate 4% increase.
That was your idea, I think, Nancy.
Yeah.
So where is that? So
that's here for 2019.
Where's here?
It's the last column.
So all the way on the right. So 2019, the phase cost of service, we do a 2% increase to everybody except single-family Winslow, and then single-family Winslow, we get 6%. And then... to the other question that you asked last time, 2020, we did kind of a similar thing, so let's do the 2% inflationary adjustments again, and 5.9% increase a single family. And so at the end of 2020, what that gets us is it gets us closer to cost of service. So cost of service, we're saying single-family Winslow should be paying for 55% of the cost. Mm-hmm. They're currently paying 49.8% under current rates. Mm-hmm. And by the end of 2020, we'd be up to 51.8, so almost 52. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, by doing it that way, we are slowing the attainment of cost of service, but we're moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Right. Everybody comfortable with that?
I don't know.
And there's no...
What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I mean, I like the idea of slowly equalizing over time. I'm still got this whole cart before the horse problem of...
having the CIP.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah. The CIP is even bigger than what I said.
That's what
I'm talking about. All these are going to change.
You brought up these numbers.
This is what Ron complains about. If we talk about this stuff, it only gets more expensive.
That's right.
If you keep the CIP out of it, I do like not having... I mean, a whole collection of small rudder changes instead of any of these big sweeping ones that don't seem to have any good reason why that one's the most important. And if we're moving in the right direction, and it takes us 2 years, 3 years to get this cost of service balance correct, I think that's a prudent way to do it.
And it's a fair thing to say to the community. Okay, look, over time, we got out of whack, we're going to bring it back over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those are the homeowners and voters who don't want the sudden surge.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pay your share, but we're just not going to hit you with a metal hammer. We're going to use a rubber hammer.
Rubber chicken.
In every pot.
Okay.
So then that was the cost of service update. The water rate structures question is, what rate alternative should the council adopt? And so... we have one scenario where we increase the existing rates across the board based on the 4% that we did for water and whatever sewer ends up being. We have 3% in this presentation, but it might be lower. We could also do class-specific adjustments based on the pure cost of service analysis, which in this case, you know, we would increase single-family Winslow by 15.5%, and there'd be a whole series of decreases for everybody else to get to the 4%. Another option would be class-specific adjustments based on the phase cost of service analysis. And so that would be these percentages on the right. So we do 2% increases to everybody except Winslow single family, 6%.
So to summarize, the UAC is leaning toward 3 there.
That's what I think.
Yeah. Okay.
And then there's another alternative that we had discussed. It was based on the phase structure, but we would effectively consolidate the single family classes in Winslow and Rockaway Beach. We would change multifamily from the block rate structure to either seasonal or uniform. So just a rate per CCF during the summer or winter, or just one rate per year, instead of having the block structure for them.
Because we didn't think the seasonal phasing was really working.
For multifamily, the issue was they have a block structure right now, like single family. Mm-hmm. And the issue is most of the consumption ends up in the lower blocks. Most of the consumption ends up in the lower blocks, and so the block structure doesn't target multifamily very well because the tenants don't generally see the bills directly anyway. Mm-hmm. The more common practice is to have a seasonal volume rate, so just X per CCF in the summer and the winter, or just have one uniform the whole year, but not get into the blocks. And then the other recommendation was consolidating the commercial and other customer or mixed-use customers, where they currently pay the same volume rate, but the mixed-use customers, there are 5 of them, and they pay a higher base rate. And the cost of service analysis is showing that they're overpaying more than anyone right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so the recommendation was just consolidate them into the commercial class. And so that's
Would that simplify billing as well?
I would think so. I mean, you would have one less set of rates to try.
Do you recall who is paying that 37% too much? I mean, who those
they
that
were
was the multifamily.
Winslow Green, I think, came to mind.
So it was mixed use. So commercial and then residential on top. So Winslow Green and maybe the famous
which isn't something I want to discourage. That's how you get it effective.
It was just a weird class of customers.
Yeah, and there haven't been any additions.
Square too? Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes, right thing.
Well, yes.
That turned me from being a fan of 3 to 4.
Yeah, and so to show you. There are a lot of numbers here, but it's showing the rate forecast for 2019 and 2020. And this is single family rates, and so it kind of shows you what it would look like. And then here, as we discussed last time, I added the sample bills for each class to the table. And so we'd see right now 3420 is what a 3/4-inch single family home using 11 CCF would pay. And yeah, I mean, they'd pay $35.57 in 2019 under the across-the-board scenario. They would get a bigger bump in the cost of service scenario, the full cost of service, so they'd be at $39.50. The phase cost of service, they'd be at $36.26. And then they'd be slightly higher in the cost of service alternative, because if we consolidate Rockaway Beach and we consolidate the other, there's going to be a very slight revenue shortfall that will then get made up from them.
So we need to talk about Rockaway Beach for a moment.
Okay.
Because there's, 90 homes there?
60.
So I think the full building is 90, I think. Close to it. Yeah.
And the rates, just so everybody's clear, remember, they pay through their LID to build the system. If there are improvements that need to occur for that system, are they going to pay it, or is the entire system going to pay it? That's the question. So, and we talked when we were doing this water plan, remember, about a potential huge number to provide really water,
fire
water service for that area. And so the question is, who pays for that? And if we combine, so today, are they paying in their water bills, are they paying capital charges for Winslow? Are they paying
They're
capital
paying the
costs?
Same capital charge.
Is everybody, where I'm going is, mm-hmm. Someday, Rockaway Beach needs $2 million new water system. That's 90 houses, some of the wealthiest houses on the island. People in Winslow are going to pay for that. Shouldn't they pay for that? And we need to figure, we need to answer the question.
How do those
capital costs get paid?
Well,
and so I want to be clear that we're comfortable with.
I mean, you could start segregating little geographic pockets all over the city. You could say Commodore, we need a high pressure zone for Commodore, should pay for that. Mm-hmm. You could say something out of Fletcher Bay needs its own thing out there. I mean, you could take the water system and divide it. And,
I understand.
I mean, it just happens that Rockaway is physically separated and has separate assets.
And I just want us to be able to say we decided.
Yeah.
That they are part of the system, even though they're separate from
the system.
Well,
I think our SQL CIP shows that these fire protection improvements in particular are very local.
Well, we clearly talked about it with our sewer, the sewer lines at the bottom of the wood. Mm-hmm. That only affects that.
Everybody's paying for that.
Everybody's paying for
the high zone water is
just to be clear, they currently, those Rockaway Beach folks are currently paying on their water bill not only the operational costs, but the capital costs for the Winslow system, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to...
For the system,
because
they bought it.
Well, for the system.
For SPFs?
Yeah.
My understanding is they pay the same SPFs.
Okay.
But what about the monthly rate that they're paying?
They pay a separate set of rates that are higher than the column here. So, for example, the 3/4-inch meter in Winslow pays $10.77, the left column here. Mm-hmm. $10.77, and Rockaway Beach pays $11.64. And so their rates are proportionately higher right now.
And we don't know the reason why.
No. I think that was the consensus. I mean,
yeah, I'm not sure.
I think at some point the city might have taken over the system and maybe charged.
My guess is that it was simply that when the city took over the system, they left the rates as is, or whatever.
I thought it was that Rockaway had asked to be connected, and so they had to put the bill under the.
Well, yeah, I remember when they did, but the idea was they
because it was in conjunction with the sewer. They wanted water and they wanted sewer.
Well,
sewer
first it was just water.
Yeah.
First it was just water. Sewer came
10 years
later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was they paid for the system in an LID, but that wasn't the rates. I don't remember the rates. I don't remember why that differed.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but I think it's fair to say it's basically a historical accident.
Okay.
So Rockaway was able to say, I want to be part of the city water. They had their own water system, and then they said, we want to be part of the city water, and we want to connect?
No, what they said was, the private system over there was failing.
Yeah.
They were run out of water.
So
they came to the city and said, would you help us provide a new water system? And the city said, yeah, but you've got to pay for it through an LID.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the city ran the system, the whole deal. They got signatures, and into the city.
So they're paying a separate LID for and what it costs, yeah.
And they already, probably it's been so long, it's paid off. Uh-huh. The LID's paid off.
Okay.
So now they're paying.
And they did the same thing with the sewer? Was there an LID?
And then they did the sewer 10 years later when they did the South Island sewer system. Same deal.
That's, they did an LID, yeah.
They did an LID for Rockland Beach and for Lynnwood Center and all that stuff.
Well,
I wouldn't involve
them. How would we know if the LID is paid off?
Pardon me?
How would we know if the LID is paid
well,
off?
Well, it's paid off by every time you sell a home, it's paid, that portion is paid off.
It's usually 15 years.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, given that, I think we should make it one system and not worry about the geography or the water system improvements.
I think, you know, given that some of this is stuff that we're looking at for the first time in a couple of decades, that it makes sense to say that it's time to consolidate all of this and not maintain the distinctions that are sort of artificial.
Well, to me, the best, I understand all that, but to me, the best answer is over time, Rockaway Beach has been paying as part of their 1184 money that's used by the Winslow system for its capital improvements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Therefore, it's only fair that when Rockaway Beach needs capital improvements, Winslow ought to pay. It's kind of, we're all one system. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was decided when we let them connect. I mean, right, ultimately.
I would think so, yeah.
Once you get over the hurdle of the initial cost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then you're part of the system. Just like I think he pointed out that Commodore, there's just a couple of homes on Commodore driving up this cost for fire suppression. And what are we going to say, that we're not covering them? They're special fires, so they get higher heights? Now you're in the system, you're in the system.
Yeah, schools are part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
But then that's the other allocation, Ouija board, that figures that out.
The poor people with the
system. Those kinds of service.
All right, okay. So I think we're all there.
Okay. And then multifamily, just to kind of highlight the recommendations here. So you've got the existing on the left. There's a base rate per unit, 537. There are the consumption charges per CCF for the same blocks, first 5 CCF. Next 7, so basically 7 to 12, or 6 to 12, 13 to 30, and then over 30 CCF. I want to say it was less than, it was like roughly 2% or something maybe, and sort of all three of those blocks, if I remember correctly. So it was, we're recommending that you switch those to a winter and a summer volume rate. So, and this cost service alternative, that would be 105 per CCF during the winter months, November through April. And then 121 per month per CCF during the May through October period.
So you brought it up several times, Steve, that the meters get read bimonthly. So how does that fit with the months?
So I think that would have to do with the billings that happen during that period. Now, the disadvantage of the seasonal rate structure is that there is that complexity, and you may very well have to estimate some usage or prorate things, depending.
It doesn't sound good.
No. So the other alternative is, instead of doing the seasonal, we just move to a uniform rate, which would be 113 per CCF for all multifamily
units. That sounds good.
It seems to me that the purpose of the block rates and the seasonal rates, conceptually, the reason for doing it would be as an incentive.
Yeah,
yes.
Conservation.
And it seems to me that in multifamily, basically, there aren't people using a lot of water to water their lawns. I mean, typically, they don't have much in the way of lawns, and if they do, it's probably on an irrigation system.
Yeah.
And so I think it makes, it's not providing a useful incentive, and it adds complexity and doesn't have a lot of benefit, so I think the uniform rate makes more sense to me.
It's so indirect.
Multifamily. Yeah, exactly.
It is obvious to other people, but so in some cases you have a 10 unit apartment building and it's not separately metered to the
tenant. Right, right.
Are there some cases where there's a 5 unit apartment building, it is separately metered? Or that's not, if that happens, it's an anomaly and happens most of the time. Or duplex.
Well, I mean, the condos, like, I can tell you, like, those condos that are going on up there on Madrona right now, yeah, there's going to be 48 meters in there. They're all in, but they're condos. Okay. They're not apartments.
And, but they are, then that's a single unit rate, not a family rate.
Right. So
it's only a multi-family rate, but you don't have a conservation incentive because, same would be true of electricity, leave the lights on, who cares, because the landlord's paying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So basically, if you got a multi-unit complex that is individually metered, they would be billed as if they were single-family?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. That is unusual to see that.
Yeah. And I think the other issue is, especially for existing multifamily buildings, the cost of going in and installing separate meters and all the units is prohibitive, and it would never happen. So, I think having consistency across the multifamily class would be very difficult, at least, over the life cycle of the assets. I mean, maybe if you had to replace things at some point, you could put them in there.
So if they are individually, like these new condos are individually metered, they're not going to be on the multifamily rate. They're going to be individual rate.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So that means that those are purely people who are not directly going to be incentivized.
Right. They don't have their own individual meter.
Right. Yeah, the summer-winter issue is the same as the block issue.
Yeah.
The block and I guess I assume they probably have an irrigation meter that's on the homeowners association, the condo account.
Yeah. Right, so it's only if you got a bunch of teenagers taking showers all the time.
Sounds like old pain
theory,
right?
When you got two people in the family instead of seven people in the family, things are different.
The uniform.
That's great.
And then for commercial other, we have a very similar issue. Except so there's the base rate by meter size, and then for commercial and other, and the key thing here is the cost service alternative, we combine the other and commercial so they have the same base rate. They currently have a seasonal volume rate, so under the cost of service alternative, we'd be looking at 146 per CCF in the winter and 168 in the summer. If you wanted to move to a uniform rate for them too, it would be 158 per CCF. And then kind of a similar set of increases, another 2% increase in 2020 under the cost of service alternative. Here we have most of the sample bill comparisons that we did last time were in the commercial category. The restaurant, the church, the school, hotel, and a couple of the mixed use.
So the restaurants are paying more than the churches, schools are paying more than restaurants.
And it depends on the meter size and the water use.
Okay.
And so, the restaurant in this example was a 3/4-inch meter, mm-hmm. and the school was a 2-inch meter.
Okay.
So there's that higher.
So that will still happen.
I think of churches as mostly being empty and not being used that much.
Well, that example certainly has a low CCF.
Yeah.
But it's because it has a smaller.
So the church has a 1.5-inch meter, which, so 69.78 would be the current base rate that they pay. And that would go up potentially in the cost of service alternative to 71.18, and then they pay a charge on 28 CCF.
So these are monthly rates, not bi-monthly.
Those are monthly rates.
So a church is paying $185 a month.
Seems like a lot for water.
I think it depends on what church you're talking about.
Well,
some of them have kitchens.
We've got some of them that are pretty active all week long with.
And others are
schools, groups, and that kind of thing.
And they're all paying the same, or is this an app?
No,
this is an example.
That's a meter size. This is
it's a meter and a consumption, and it's very much average. So,
there are commercial structures when you get around to it. If kitchens and people coming and going.
If they have an inch and a half meter, they probably have a kitchen, and all that. So,
yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't 3/4 be enough.
So for the schools, I thought we talked about the schools having reduced rates.
So last time I did run that scenario. The consensus I thought there was that we weren't necessarily talking about having lower rates for schools. I think we looked at the cost of service for the schools. I mean, I can come up with that again if you wanted it. But, you could justify. We did see that there was.
Oh, I see, yeah. If we
create a category.
If you create a class for schools. And, yeah, I mean, it was almost similar to the other class as far as they had the bulk of the decrease in the commercial class.
Right, but if we keep them as a commercial, then they just pay.
Then they just pay the commercial rate. And so the question is, do you create a separate class for schools?
It's pretty unusual.
It's unusual.
Is it a fair rate to be charging the schools?
It's a fair rate from the perspective that they are in the commercial class with all a whole bunch of other business types. And so we can pull schools out, but then the question comes, are there other business types? Or
I've seen hotels pulled out as separate, you know, as an example.
Why?
Again,
they lobby
the
city council.
No, to play cost for service. What's the service?
Yeah.
Well, the schools is very different than any other commercial use because it's a public
good.
Public good. I mean, if you're differentiating public from private, that is.
You can't do that for the rate making unless there's a difference in like demand patterns or something like that.
There's specific court decisions. You can't differentiate for the
strength of waste, different.
Yeah.
Type of waste, I don't know. Right. They don't pre-treat or treat or whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, it's the same thing when you have a single family class where you have a home with six people in it versus a little old lady who is widowed who lives in, you know, in a small house. And so they end up paying the same base rate. And there is a difference in the consumption charges because to the extent that they use less water, they pay a lower bill. But then that also exists in this structure.
So are we gravitating toward the cost of service alternatives on the right? Mm-hmm.
I would be inclined to recommend those, yes.
So a restaurant is paying $3.53?
A restaurant with a 3/4 inch meter that used 194 CCF in a month.
Oh, so that's the average CCF that you're seeing with restaurants?
That was, we got a set of example customers to use for this comparison, and that was one of them.
When you say average, is that average over a year, or I mean, is that a summer month or a winter month, or do we know, or is it just a bill?
That I don't know off the top of my head. I believe what we got, and I don't think I brought it with me this time. It was a monthly bill that had an account number and meter size and an amount of consumption.
So it really was one-off sample bill.
Yeah, so I mean, could you vary hugely in between summer and winter.
Yeah.
And certainly restaurants.
And the other thing too, I think I know what you're getting at. So yeah, this represents an annual average. So it's an average monthly bill for the year. So it's an average of the summer and the winter rates.
So okay, the first call was 2018. The second column, 2019 and 20 ATB.
Yeah, so this is across the board. So if we increased everybody's rates, the 4% for water.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the COS is?
That would be the cost of service. So if we go back here,
2%,
6%. That would be, so commercial rates, we would decrease 4%. And then the phase cost of service.
Oh, okay. So what's the phase cost of service?
So that here, we said we were going to increase
everyone's. Yeah, this is all the 6 of 2s.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And the cost service alternative is pretty much the same as that.
The cost of service alternative is
based on the phase cost of service approach. The only difference is the other class, the mixed use, we combine in a commercial, so there's a slight revenue loss that I...
Okay.
But yeah, but it's effectively the same.
So you're recommending, and I'm agreeing, right two columns.
Yes, that's correct.
When you do this, you're going to need to asterisk or footnote what the cost service alternatives means. Because it means different things in different places.
Yes, and I was...
It's really cost service.
Right, yes.
Plus other changes.
Yeah. So what I might do, if you guys agree that this is the way to go, is we could call this recommended and highlight the elements of it. And my guess is we could kind of cut down some of the alternatives that we showed to the council.
Right, we need to talk about that when we're done.
Yeah.
So the phase cost of service is the 2% increase. The cost of service alternative is not 2%?
No. So they're based on approximately the same revenue cost allocation. The difference is, it's like the cost of service alternative is phase cost of service plus the structural changes. So combining the residential.
Right.
But they're based on the same overall distribution.
Basically, phase cost
cost of service with some adjustments that are relatively minor.
We also like the word alternative.
Yes.
Plus other adjustments.
Yeah.
You use the word other, she uses the word adjustment.
Okay.
Did you use the word adjustment?
No, I'm just thinking it's cost of service.
Phase
cost of service for new class or new class definition or right.
Well, it's more than new class. Form. It's more. There's other things.
Yeah.
There's different things done
it's
here.
It's a class reduction. I mean,
new
reducing
class
the number.
We're consolidating classes.
Consolidating classes. Each one has slightly different adjustments.
So it's an improved version of the
base
CRS.
Yes. Figure out how to
So aside from that, we have irrigation, which,
water.
I mean, there's the 4% increases to irrigation rates. Cost of service, there would be like a 17%, almost 18% reduction to the irrigation rates. And then the phase cost of service would be a 2% increase each year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what the sample bills would look like for those users. And so, yeah, I mean, that's basically the end. I mean, we just come up with the committee recommendation. We can choose how we want to label the recommended alternative.
Well, we haven't done directly beach, excuse me, south and sewer yet.
So the sewer cost of service is the next step. I was trying to have something today to discuss. We're not quite there yet. I think we have the analysis structured, and the general finding is we're seeing a shift of costs toward commercial and South Island. So, I mean, South Island, it looks like, is going to see an increase in costs, in part because of the costs that the city has allocated to them, like the O&M costs that are directly attributable, but also a proportionate share of other administrative costs like taxes and administrative staff and things like that.
Overhead.
And so the one thing that I'm still trying to work through are loading assumptions. And the reason that that's important is because we're trying to do the analysis in the same way we did the water analysis, except with sewer system functions. So there's customer service, there's flow, conveying wastewater through the system, and then there's treatment, particularly for Winslow. And so there we have to make an assumption, well, what does a single-family home contribute in terms of biochemical oxygen demand and suspended solids versus commercial? And so we looked at the system plan, we're trying to come up with something based on your data to figure out how do we approximate that. And I'll probably be talking to Barry more about that in the near future. But once we get that worked out, I should be pretty quick at having some draft results.
By next meeting?
Could be.
So let's talk big picture about when this gets to the council. Because we have three issues. We have the SPFs, we have the water, and we haven't seen sewer yet.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want all that to go to the council at one time? We haven't even seen sewer. We haven't talked CIP yet.
So maybe we could boot this thing now, get our recommendations over there next time.
Well, that's...
And just this part.
What I'm a little uneasy about is if the CIP is significantly higher. I mean, I just literally experienced this with another client where we had a council meeting, we gave our presentation, and then a week later it's like, oh, yeah, well, let's add all these costs in it, see what happens to the rate forecast. And it, of course, blew it up. So I would say... We should get the CIP in as good a shape as we can before we start parading rate recommendations out.
So are you? This doesn't sound to me like it's in. The rates are going to get to the council anytime soon.
Right, and so we kind of recognize that, talking to Ellen and executive about it. That it's, you know, we were probably fooling ourselves to think we're going to rush it in, get it done before the budget process. It's not going to get there. So this week, Ellen did a. An ordinance or whatever, it's a resolution, or I guess it's an ordinance, that said we're not going to do our automatic rate increase, which we do every year. We defer that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And just a side note on that, we actually read it closer than I had read it before. If you read the code says CPI plus 2%. So that would be even more than what we're coming up with probably. So that sounded heavy anyway. So that probably needs to go away.
Mm-hmm.
as a long-term thing. So anyway, the bottom line is we've kind of paused it and said we don't need to finish this before the budget. We do need, the one thing that kind of needs to be done is a water rate needs to be established that covers our operating costs before the next audit cycle, otherwise we might get an audit finding. But that isn't until spring. So we have time to do something, and we're on schedule to finish it maybe by the end of the year or something anyway. If we do it by the end of the year, I think we're still fine.
Okay.
But so I think we keep going like we've been doing.
Right,
every 2 weeks, we just keep pushing, and when we get the water and sewer rates, we go with it.
So are we going for CIP next?
Well, just a second. Mm-hmm. The question is whether we want to carve out the system participation fee and run that totally.
Yeah, because that is it. Every time a developer comes in, they're underpaying.
Yeah, yeah, that's a separate issue. Yeah.
And get that in before the moratorium expires.
Yeah, just do that. That would be a good idea, because really, in theory, all these years they've been underpaying, so we're really behind.
And from my perspective, it's totally a separate issue than the rates. And
right.
If you run it all together, people are going to be screaming, let's just focus on the connection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, the one caveat is the SPS are also dependent on the CIP.
Yeah.
So,
I understand.
But that being said, I mean, if we were to proceed with what we had and then the CIP comes back higher, and you can also update that next year or something.
But isn't it fair to say that they're based on the aggregate of the CIP and not so much the cash flow, like the rate?
No, it's based on, we have a list of projects and costs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if it happens in 2021 versus 2022, that doesn't matter.
Exactly.
But it's just the cost of the project.
The rates do, you're right.
Yeah, that's kind of why we lean toward the averages, because it's not so vulnerable to the changes in the CIP as the other method was.
I think getting the system participation fee thing agreed to by the council as soon as possible would be helpful to at least having that part of your analysis firmly set.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe we ought to talk about him splitting out the SPF in a separate report. Mm-hmm. We could then write our own recommendation to support that and tell them that the rates are coming.
Mm-hmm.
We've had five meetings on it.
But we wanted to beat the moratorium deadline.
Well, we're ready.
The candidate has been undercharged for years and years.
Yes.
And we're ready. We finished the analysis on that. We just haven't finished them on water.
And plus, it helps, you know,
stabilize
his figures by knowing that that's a definite.
Yeah.
So then his report is more... Yeah. Ready.
And worst case scenario, if there are projects that don't get into the SPF right now, that's okay. That's certainly better than if they don't get into the rate recommendation.
Okay.
I mean, we could do that.
All right, so let's talk about you carving that out in a report, and we can mm-hmm. Jeff and I can maybe write up something before the next meeting that sort of says where we are.
Almost. On the SPF, is there any reason to put a little fudge factor on the aggregate CIP? Just because these things do change, and you don't want that fundamental driver to be underestimated. So
they do, but the other problem with SPFs is I'm sure, they tend to get challenged more, and especially with the type of increase we're proposing. If you look at the methodology and we see that the CIP project cost estimates likely already have a contingency built into them.
And so
I would say we would really want to stick to the documented cost in the CIP for defensibility.
Okay.
I believe it.
These charges tend to get, there's more likelihood of challenge to them because it's big time dollars for some developments.
Yeah.
And so the city has to be able to justify it with his report.
Right, but I get that. I mean, the fudge factor is just a lawsuit waiting to happen. I get that. But if you got the project that you're moving from 2024 to 2025 to get it out of the curve, that may be one we should keep in 2024 to get this rate.
But that's the rates.
I would say if your CIP, the thing is, and you're a city, not a special purpose district. So special purpose districts, they're only limited to, or they're limited to a 10-year CIP. And so if there's something in year 11, they can't include that. Cities are not subject to that requirement. I mean, we tend to focus on a 6 to 10 year planning period for conservatism, and it's when the dollars are sort of best defined. But, yeah, I mean, if in your case, if there's a project in 2024 that gets pushed back to 2025 or 26 for rate-making purposes, it can still be in the SPF. That's not a problem, as long as they're documented in your plan.
Okay. Okay. All right, so we're moving in that direction. So let's go to the CIP and talk about that. Where are we?
Well, so
maybe a reminder about what the CIP is.
Yeah,
is?
I guess we can do that.
There was this wonderful memo you sent out.
What's the CIP? In the CIP, that is the basis of these charges, so we can remind ourselves what that is.
And is that going to match the last page a little bit?
Yeah, very, very sent. Did you send it to full committee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I
yeah.
I didn't print it.
So,
it's in your car.
Mine is at my office.
I didn't see it. Well, look at it. It's just in reality.
My printer's out of ink.
Everybody's got their thing.
It's time to buy your printer.
Everybody's got their thing.
Cheaper than common. So I get my homework.
All right, so.
So is this table one going to be very similar to what we had for the CIP for the water? Or just a very small part of it? Or?
So here's the water overall. Oh, it's not really going to be messy out of a small screen or something. Anyway, so yeah, these are the projects. So the thing I sent you today or yesterday or whenever it was, I got the report last week, it had to do with high zone improvements as well as storage tank. And it, so we had fudged in, just guessing, like $3.2 million for the tank. And then this project up here, high zone improvements, another $900,000. So we had $4.1 million technically in the CIP to cover the repiping and doing something with the tank to fix that problem. Now he sent us a report that says it's probably $6.5 million or something, so a couple million more at least.
So that's the new reservoir and the reservoir.
Still some question about how high the tank needs to be and how much volume needs to be in it, and a lot of it is around the school building, and really the one school building that's not sprinklered, the two-story old Commodore school that's
coming down,
drives a 3,500 GPM fire flow requirement. So it comes back to that again, you know. We need to look at that closer.
Can the city pay the school district?
Did I hear somebody say, it's not scheduled to be turned off?
No.
I don't know.
Is there a better place for affordable housing right next to the school?
But is it cheaper to sprinkler that building than to spend on the tank or something, you know?
So there's a building at Commodore that's driving this whole 3,500?
Yeah, that's the worst fire flow.
And what if you take that building out, what do we drop down?
I don't know for sure. That's the thing we need to continue.
And the school district has talked about what they do with Commodore forever and ever. And
well, they took down half of it.
I know, but they haven't figured out what to do with it. And I understand that.
So anyway, we need to tease that out a
Barry,
little bit more.
Is that the first three things on here?
No. That would be the first three things are Olympic Drive. That's just a waterline replacement.
No, I'm looking at on the thing you sent us. The reservoir redesign, the new reservoir, and the reservoir one well booster
pump. Report.
Yeah. Is that the $6 million?
I guess what? Let me go back. Let me go to that now. Mm-hmm. What I sent you, I think the thing the numbers that we're looking at right now. It's got a lot of alternatives in there, and those are. Mm-hmm. Kind of cloud the issue, so we need to just probably look at the cost estimate for.
You're looking at the last page.
The last page, the for 5D. Yeah. 5D cost estimate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the one that's like $6.5 million, I think, or thereabouts. Isn't that? No, I'm in
so
the
you had $4.1 million, and this is seven. This is six and this is $5.5 million.
Yeah, it goes technical level.
Oh.
It's only page 7.
For the new reservoir and the booster pump modifications.
There we go. That's the same one, Nancy?
Yeah.
Nope.
This is 7 of 7.
Oh,
I can.
That's not what we've
got. This is alternative 5D, new reservoir, and a dusted hydraulic grade line for existing high zone. These are all the costs. That's the $6.5 million I'm talking about. And that's a pretty fat number.
Okay, we didn't get that.
No, it's in that report essentially. It's the last page or so. I mean, I don't know what.
Well, you've got a 23-page report, and this is a 7-page report.
Yeah. Good point.
How did that happen? I don't know.
I thought
I sent you the whole thing.
This was a technical number.
Anyway, this is what we need to focus on. I mean, okay. There's a lot of words in there. There's a lot of alternatives. This is okay. Kind of alternative, I think, is going to be the one we need to look at. But there's some things here that we need to...
Yeah,
you know, there's $1.2 billion on additional reservoir height. Whether we can make that short or not is a question. The other thing is there's a big contingency in here, 30%. So this is out there a number of years. So there is some fudge factors in here. But we need to. What I'm saying is that's a draft report. We haven't given the consultant our comments and tried to drill down a little bit more on the alternatives, but that's just where it is right now. But what I was getting at, comparing this number, 6.4, to what is actually in the CIP, and that compares to 3.2 plus 900. So really 4.3 is in the CIP, and 6.4 right now is that number there.
What's the bottom line there?
It's like 8.85, yeah.
All right, so that's the... So, Chris, these are the numbers you're using for the water CP, the 8.5, right?
I was using 10 or 11.
What is it? Let me see. So the numbers in the presentation that I showed were inflated. So let's see.
So this is real?
So I'm actually, in uninflated dollars, I have $10,287,000.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what... Water?
This is water.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, this is sewer. I'm looking at. Okay. Sorry. Okay. I was trying to run a scenario. Okay, let me pull water out.
Water is even more.
The other number, the $6 million that you just showed, that was a cost estimate?
That's a cost estimate from a consultant that we've hired to do a specific study of the water system in the high zone, with the storage tanks and that thing. So we've asked him to dig in deeper to the CIP development in that area.
So it's all at the high school.
Yeah.
All those tanks. Mm-hmm.
That's what's called the high zone.
$6 million that corresponds to four something.
As
the part of
before
this.
We got this report, we were guessing like four something, and now he's
so in effect that's going to add another $2 million.
Well, unless we can
unless something else gets us
keep working.
Merry
yeah.
Christmas.
Yeah.
All right. That's the worst case, I guess.
Is that first column 18? K?
Okay.
Oh, that's prior year. So 19.
Yeah.
Okay. So 19, I have 1.8. I think you have 1.4.
No, he has 1.8.
1.4. 1.4.
Well, let's look at what you got.
So those are the totals by year.
Oh, I know. What's not in here is the equipment. So all this stuff here, that's not in there.
Oh, I see.
There we go.
Well, that helps.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's. Yeah, so this is just the projects, and then there's the equipment, you know, like the trucks and things. Mm-hmm. That's probably the difference. Right? Mm-hmm.
All right, so what do we do with this?
So this should represent an increase in the numbers of ESUs. If we can't engineer these,
well, that's what I was looking at.
Figure it out.
That's what I was looking at. This project down here, that this water treatment thing, that's $1.5 million or $2 million in the last 2 years of the CIP.
We have that.
Yeah, that's in there. But if we needed to
move that money over to the water tower,
bump it out of the 6-year window. That was what I was talking about. This last project at the bottom, bump it out the 6-year window, put $2 million more in as a replacement into that other project. We're kind of, you know, even Steven in the 6-year window, what we, you know, I mean.
So this little table one with the 10.64 and 12.76 million is not really pertinent to this discussion?
I don't know. This is the...
This is Gray and Osborne.
I mean, this is what you sent us.
Maybe you sent us the wrong
There's like 2 sevens on the seven.
Yeah, this is a lot more stuff. This includes. This includes. I don't know, I must have sent you the wrong thing.
Manganese.
Will you send us this one?
Yeah, and I don't know how I didn't. I'm looking at it now. So this one that I have here, that I had here,
This was what I intended to send you. So this was something, it's like I said, it's marked draft. I just got it last Thursday, September 6th, or Friday, Thursday. So this is what I intended to send you. I don't know what happened.
This is September 5th.
It's got a different memorandum number.
Yeah. So anyway, this is the one, this is specifically just, because the reason, this is the pressure zone alternatives that I really intended. That one I can see it includes the water system treatment. That includes the 1.5.
The manganese and chlorine.
That's not in here.
Okay.
So this one has a lot of different alternatives on what to do up there, and the recommended alternative is this last one at the end, like I said, which is a new tank and all the piping and pump work that would be required to do that.
So you're not worrying about the manganese and the extra chlorine.
We worry about it because it's a aesthetic issue. It's not a regulatory issue right now, but it's still is a concern of DOH that, and we're anticipating it'll be a greater concern. It's not a contaminant that it's
regulated.
Orange. Yeah. So it's something we need to do eventually. It creates maintenance problems if you don't do something
but
about it.
But it's not in your budget as of now.
No, it is.
It is.
It's the one I would say.
It's the last thing.
So if we drop it out or defer it a couple more years, that would be it down here.
Mm-hmm. Could Chris, your total CIP budget is what?
Let's see.
I thought it was 11.6.
Water or sewer?
Both. Water.
Water.
Water, yeah. 11.6 would be, that's the inflated number. Yeah.
With the trucks and equipment.
Yeah.
And if you take the trucks and equipment out, what are we talking about?
Inflated number, what do you mean by that?
We add inflation to the cost estimates.
And this is real.
So that's why it's
Yeah. 11.3.
But do your cost estimates already have the inflation?
So if we leave the vehicles and equipment out, it's 11.3.
And then
those with contingencies.
Oh, uninflated. Okay.
Sorry.
So to answer your question, yes. They have a contingency.
They have inflation.
And they have inflation on the contingency.
$10,108,000 is what I have.
You're Scott?
So we're going to
15 minutes.
Sure.
I just thought I'd come early and get
you. So I have $10,108,000. So there might be some project that shifted, but
so do you need inflation on contingency?
We typically the cost estimates that we get are typically expressed in current year dollars, and we typically adjust for inflation. I mean, unless we're told otherwise.
This table said 10.64 to 12.76 million, which kind of
So can I throw out an idea? As we move forward with the participation fee and to council, and in that session, we bring up the subject that the water system's looking at roughly $12 million in capital projects through 2024, which is like $5 million more than sitting in the bank at the moment. And so, UAC is struggling with how we're going to fund that down the road. And that just kind of opens the door for council to know there's a rate increase coming. It's just how we're going to recommend it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to pay for this stuff. The water system has not, there's been very little capital money spent on the water system for quite a while. So you're going to have to start doing that.
That's a good idea.
Uh-huh.
Well, we could have a water truck that goes around.
I'm just listening about that. So how do we want to deal with the CIP? Should we do that at the next meeting? I probably
need to.
Pretty reasonable to add the new report's CIP figure.
Unless he and the staff have.
We have some questions about it, so I wouldn't say we're buying it.
Well, I think aren't we just struggling at this point with the participation fee and what goes in it for the participation fee? I mean, in terms of rates, I mean that's going to be a constantly moving target over for months.
And but
$2 million is a big number. Yeah, yes and no. I mean, for the participation fee, you're not limited to those 6 years. For the rates, but so.
So one difference is there's a development rehab project that you have is $200,000. It's live 14. I have an extra $1.5 million in the next year after that 200.
So what I think we need to do is have these guys work on a CIP discussion for us for next time. And we'll pick
it
up.
Yeah, ultimately, yeah, we can make sure the CIP.
It's about $10 million, though.
Yeah.
CIP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about $10 million.
That
yeah.
That's
what
we're
not 85.
So that would be. I'm just looking at that.
That's a big year. That last year with all the money going out the door.
Uh-huh. All right. So to bring to closure today, we'll you look more at the CIP next time about what his thinking is and what. Is going into your numbers.
Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll get something else that was sent to us that will match that better.
I hope, yeah.
Yeah.
And that will give us more info on that.
Also, while you guys were talking, I ran the sewer rate scenario to see how we could shave the rate forecast down. And so we could do 2% increases per year, and that would get us to 68% depreciation funding by 2024. Compared to 90, but we would still get to full depreciation funding by 2026. So it's not materially.
That's
fine.
That does sound.
All right. So, all right. And, but we're going to have more time to talk about these rate questions because we're slowing down the rate. And next time we come back and talk about sewer and this stuff. Meanwhile, we'll move forward with the SPS stuff.
Great.
Good plan.
And when's our next meeting?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
So I'm looking at
26?
Here in 2 weeks, so that's another.
Well, do you want
to. 26.
When are we here? The 26th?
Do you need to spend a special meeting?
Well, yeah, I think we could.
Do we want to pump it?
Are you out the whole
week,
week
or back
you?
A week?
So you can do it the fall 19th?
No, I'm going to be gone the 19th through the 20th.
I'm trying to get out of here, Barry. What did you
so what about the October 3rd?
Sorry.
27th?
Yeah, the week after October 3rd is fine.
October 3rd?
Yeah.
That's putting us back a week.
Well, that would give him more time to do this, cut the SPF into a cool looking thing.
Say that again.
The next meeting's October 3rd.
Oh, boy.
And then I'll miss probably the next two after that. Israel.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. All right, so now if people have a problem with October 3rd,
I'm not as married.
We can email around and check dates and see if we can find another time.
All right, my friend.
But let's assume that the moment.
I think the 3rd works for me.
Okay. All right.
So 10-3 is
it? 10-3.
It's just
the
I'm looking at this.
We need
Barry and Chris. Is that
and then our regular one is on.
Let's see.
So we have a regular one on October
10th. October 3rd could work for me.
Okay.
Just. A personal note, October 21st, my wife is expecting to give birth. So So in the event that I'm unavailable, John Gilarducci will be able to come. And, but yeah, I mean, just letting you know that if it gets into mid to late October, November, I might not be.
Is John available. Working on this?
I can brief John. He's been doing principal review of things. So he's been looking at it, but I've been the one sort of seeing
always
it
be prepared for the early birth.
Yeah, well, that too.
Or he could help cover the baby thing, and you could cover.
Well, I haven't thought about that.
That's
maybe not.
All you do is stand around and chew your nails, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if we have
more of these days,
not like that anymore. He's got to be in the room.
6 meetings.
I've been told I have to be in the room.
You have to be in the room now.
Yeah. He's gone this 26th.
Oh, okay.
October 3rd?
Yeah, sure.
So, my visa. Like, if we have that sort of timing, what I would do.
And
we would have a regular meeting on October 10th. So, in an ideal world, I'll volunteer to work with Jeff on a sort of a report from us, which we can look at on the 3rd and then maybe approve on the 10th. So, we can keep moving this forward.
33 days.
And that report is essentially a high level narrative of the issues we discussed, but not two data tables.
No. It's his report. We're just commenting on his report. That's what we're doing.
And pretty much just ratifying these course correction decisions we made, right?
Yeah. So we're essentially recommending adoption of this report. Now we need to talk. Now, of course, the SPF is different. When we get to the water rates and sewer rates, we have all these alternatives. We need to talk about what you actually present to the council.
Yes.
And whether you do all.
We're going to narrow down the alternatives and give a recommended alternative.
Yeah, or whether he wants to give some, here's the things we considered, and here is our
recommendation
or something.
Yeah. Yes.
We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
We don't have to do that yet, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on this subject, on the third, then we'll really hone in on the CIP part.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys will work
on
that.
Yeah, we'll get that clear.
And clear. So, okay. Are we done with number eight, agenda item number eight? There you go.
All right,
Barry has 5 minutes before he leaves. So he's going to tell us about item number four.
So Doug has been coordinating with that private ISP, Net 253, the guy who came in, I forget, is Hellriggle, is his name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he's going to run a private internet pilot in this general vicinity from his Erickson building to some of the properties he's already got fiber to downtown. And so he's not going to use the PUD dark fiber. So the next action really is to create a franchise for him to operate in the right-of-way. Because right now our right-of-way says you can't operate a utility in the right-of-way without a franchise. So idea is to give him a franchise or to set up a franchise agreement that council can approve. He can operate in the right-of-way. He can do it as a pilot project. And the city may eventually be able to take that over as a utility in the future. So that's the
point. City is not getting the strands of fiber from KPUD?
No, not anymore.
Not now.
Because he has enough fiber now of his own that he's going to be able to piece together to make it viable.
Barry, what is this physically? So he gets a franchise from us, but he has to make arrangements to hang it on PSE's pole?
Or bury it. He's already done some of that through some developer work that's already been going on.
Okay.
Along, you know, there's some projects that are going on along Erickson, as well as the townhouse project that's going up here.
And do we have a franchise fee for him?
Well, that'll be something we have to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, as part of the franchise agreement, what is the fee?
Mm-hmm.
So Hellriggle is putting in the strands.
Right, Net 253, I think, is his company.
Mm-hmm.
And how sort of extensive, I mean, how many sort of blocks of fiber and something, I mean, we don't know.
So it's in his system, which is the, I think, the, what do they call the Jeep? On system or whatever it is. So it's all coming out of his building, which he has a direct link to Seattle, the main point. And
so this will be an independent provider that people who currently have Comcast or CenturyLink can,
as an alternative, could use.
Yeah. Could switch to.
Right.
And the purpose of this is to,
I think, to create another alternative. And so
see what interest there is.
Yeah, in? See if there's interest, it's viable, and if it's something that could be expanded under a city, you know.
So is this a non-exclusive franchise?
Well, no.
So the advantage for city residents is of a city-owned broadband network is better service at a lower price. Is this still going to be city-owned?
Well, not yet. It would start out as privately owned, and then potentially the city is interested in setting up a utility, taking it over, and expanding it.
So he will sell it to us.
He will be a willing
seller.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a good question. Why are we not using KPUDs? Why did we go over to this Net 253?
The coordination was tried and it didn't work. I guess is what I would say.
Okay. There was something that they said they had to make sure the GPON worked on those strands, so it probably didn't.
Yeah.
Okay, so but do we know if Net 253 is going to give it to us if the thing works?
Yeah, and will that be part of the franchise?
I think that'll be part of the franchise agreement.
Right.
So
I assume this is all staff plan. It hasn't gone to the council for approval.
Right.
Of anything.
I mean, he's briefed council on the general concept.
But
I think
there's a significant upside.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
There's a significant upside. I think, in learning from this.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he bears the risk, right?
Right.
We don't bear a risk having granted him the franchise. Let's have a look. Let's help him do it. And And we'll see what.
And if he doesn't get the customers or he can't at the price that the market bears, then
sure, kind of being an incubator on this then.
Mm-hmm. Or we may, it doesn't quite work, but we see how we could make it work.
And so is there a role for this committee, I guess, is a question.
Well, I think it will be if it becomes a city utility. So then I guess there will be some pieces of organizing and setting up a utility that I assume this committee would be part of reviewing. And
I guess there's a question as to whether once, Doug's leaving, so somebody else, I forget, Steve Miller's taking over.
Right, yeah, so the idea is that IT would be the lead. It's primarily an IT project.
Right, but I guess the issue is whether he would then brief us and we would be asked to recommend yes or no to this concept.
Yeah, I think so.
Or the agreement that he's struck. I don't
know. One of these things about this kind of project, which could become bigger, in terms of public awareness in the council and so on, is when's the new city manager and so on. There's some other things that are kind of going to be harder to keep moving in the transition. So it's another question, but what's the sort of anticipated date of having a new city manager on board?
Well, last night council authorized the mayor to talk or to work on an agreement with the deputy city manager to step into that role for a period of time.
Is that Steve Miller?
But that would be still an interim status.
Well, but for a longer
extended period of time.
Like a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And is the idea still that the city will have a city-owned broadband network? Is that what we're still working toward?
Potentially. I don't think that's a decision.
Nobody's agreed to that.
It's not an agreed decision.
The city council has not said yes to that.
But that's the concept for the reason we're letting
right.
Net 253 do this. Right? That is still the concept.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
None of this has come before council.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard about this, I think, since back in March or something.
No, I think didn't he gave us a city manager report.
Didn't he make a
no, it must have been early summer, right?
He briefed the council.
I don't know exactly.
Yeah, there was
the gentleman that came and spoke at the
was what
at the meeting of this committee.
Yeah. Oh, he hasn't been there. Yeah.
No.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, right now I think he's still a private entity who wants to provide a service. In order to allow that, you're going to have to develop a franchise agreement. That's going to have to go to council. Then that'll be like, okay, he's going to operate this, and then. If this and that happens, and this could be the eventuality, if it becomes a city thing, this would be the first
step. It would be important to keep that franchise agreement before the UAC so we see where this is going. Some of it's going to be too dull and lawyerly, but
I think
the basic concepts of.
Like a right of first refusal.
Some of those things would be very important. And Steve and I were trying to meet with Doug, and it never happened between last meeting and this meeting.
That's right, you were a subcommittee.
Yes, sir.
Right. So I'm perfectly willing to keep with that, and I think Steve is too. Should we contact Steve Miller, or should we contact Morgan?
Well, I'm wondering, you know me, shirking responsibility is also, but maybe we're, at this point, Ted, we let Barry do what he said.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too complicated, and... and, how long is this going to be on Steve Miller's plate and so on. Mm-hmm. So do you need this subcommittee to do anything right now to do the things that are right before us?
Well, it's not always really what I need. It's what would council like you to do for them is kind of a recommendation work. And so I assume they want some...
This is a good idea. This is a good idea.
This is generally on our work plan for this year. Okay. Council's asked us to look at this, and so at some point we can talk to Steve and find out what his plans are and what should come to us at the appropriate time.
Right. So Doug is out, but I need to coordinate with Steve, and maybe we'll get Steve when he's ready to pick up the
call. Okay. Great.
You want me to
leave?
I got to run, but
Barry, you want me and Steve to try to catch up more with you before the next meeting or down the road?
Let's hold on now.
Let's run. Yeah.
And email us.
Go ahead, take over.
Email us the new numbers.
I got to
go to the
memo.
Email us the memo.
The new numbers.
Thank you.
Right. Did you guys need me anymore? Or should I take
over? No, Chris.
You can get out of here.
Time
served.
Thank you.
That's a lot to explain. You're doing a great job on that.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, Scott, we have you here for 15. I'm Andy Merrin, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Are you leaving too, Steve?
Yeah. I said 6:30. Excuse that.
Excuse.
I think you're showing an wall.
Are we letting them out of here?
Yeah. You want an ethics brochure?
Well, I don't want to sit out.
Of course it does.
We all
want to introduce ourselves.
Yeah.
I'm Emily Sato.
Hi, Emily. I'm Jeff Cantor.
Hi.
Ted Jones.
Risham.
Hi. Charlie Abel.
See you again. Hi, Charlie.
And Nancy Nolan.
Hi.
So, Scott, just so you know, we're the committee, and we've all been briefed before. Several of us have been, and we're not new to this stuff.
That was going to be my first question, is how many of you guys have done this before?
Many times.
Because we have to do it every 2 years for every committee.
I haven't done anything recently, but I was on the city council for 8 years and the planning commission for 9 years.
And I want to keep saying that other than we're not newbies to this.
Yeah, well, no, that's...
Okay, the really important stuff is not happening.
I don't want me to miss
the ethics.
Well, that's your brochure.
You said give me your report card, but you skipped it.
So
I'll go through this pretty quick since you've done all of this before. I'm not going to go through every bit of what's listed on this PowerPoint agenda. I'm certainly not going to read the whole PowerPoint.
Why don't you tell us your role with the committee?
I'm the current chair of the Ethics Board. I've been on the board since sometime in 2016. I think my term ends next year.
Who did you succeed?
Joe Dees.
Oh, yeah.
So Joe gave us our last one.
Yeah,
there you go. One of the things the Ethics Board is supposed to do is to present this presentation to every committee. Every citizen advisory committee is subject to the city's ethics program, and so it's important that all the members of the committees know what the expectations of the ethics program are of them. There are two main parts of our ethics program. There's our core values, which are kind of the do the right thing things, right? They're kind of act in the best interest of the public, treat each other with respect, those kinds of general broad concepts. Mm-hmm. And currently in the ethics program, those core values are not, the ethics board is not authorized to take any action as far as complaints of violations of those core values. The Ethics Board can only investigate complaints about Article 2 of the Ethics Code, which is what is covered in this brochure and what I'm really going to talk to you guys about. So one of the other things the Ethics Board does is we investigate complaints against city council members as well as members of committees and commissions, as well as theoretically contractors to the city, although in the time that I've been on the board that's never come up, but they are, per our ethics code, contractors to the city are covered by our code of ethics. I've just never seen it come up. So the things that the ethics code says that we will all abide by are what we refer to as the four C's. So compensation and gifts, subject to limited exceptions, we cannot and our immediate families cannot accept a gift for any matter related to our duties with the city. Confidentiality. We will keep what we learn in our duties with the city confidential, except as required by law. Conflict of interest. This one comes up most often in my tenure on the board.
questions about conflict of interest, says that we cannot directly or indirectly take direct official action on a matter on behalf of the city if one of us or a member of our family has a substantial contractual employment interest related to the matter, has other financial or private interest in the matter, or is party to a contract or owner of an interest in real or personal property that will be significantly affected by the action. So the conflict of interest question is what we've come up against a couple of times. We have a current complaint before the board that we'll be talking about at our meeting next week related to conflict of interest. And I think there's a lot of gray area here, and there's also a lot of I think there's a lot of some people think it's a conflict of interest for you. Some people might say, well, you live on the island. It's a conflict of interest for you to be setting utility rates because you benefit from the, if you choose to lower them, right? There's an inherent conflict of interest there, right? But that would be kind of ridiculous on its face, right? So it's not really black or white to me. And so that's why there's an ethics board to, if we do receive a complaint about something like that, to consider it and make a recommendation to council.
Well, you could be on a committee or the council and just recuse yourself from that particular item.
You could, but in that case, in my example, then every one of you would have to recuse yourself from every one of your meetings.
Mm-hmm. Right, except for me. I don't have any city utilities.
Oh, well, there you go. So you can set up one.
If you want to make the decisions, have the decisions made by somebody who...
Right, I don't
go find somebody out of state to make the decisions.
I had no skin in the game.
There you go. We have had, but so anyway, you can see where the conflict of interest question could easily be brought up and isn't always a conflict of interest. So that's what the board is.
In a small town, it should come up monthly, you'd think. Mm-hmm.
You'd think. And actually, in the past month, it's coming up a lot. Mm-hmm. So, and then the last is conduct of all public meetings, which is basically covered by the Open Public Meetings Act. And I'm assuming that you've all been briefed on that and know all how all that works.
No LeVan
came. We have our page on the webpage if you are interested in more details about our ethics program. The whole program is listed there. It's in statute. The other thing I like to let people know is if there's a complaint that goes to the ethics board about one of these four C's and we investigate it, if there is one, we would look into it. We would, before I go into what we would do, those complaints have to be done publicly. The complainant has to name themselves, right? They have to file their complaint with the city clerk. You can't complain to us anonymously. Take any information from the person who wants to make the complaint. We would contact the complainant and ask for their anything that they have to say, their side of the story, and we make a determination whether or not there has likely been a violation of the ethics code. And if we determine that there has likely been a violation of the ethics code, we would write up all the reasons why we think that is and present it to council. And then it's up to them to take whatever steps they deem necessary to address that violation.
Does that happen in executive session? Because that's probably a lot of personal information could be in there.
Could be.
You're naming somebody.
And it's all public as soon as they make the complaint. It's public.
True.
So you could make a completely unfounded complaint against anyone to the ethics board, and it would be public record.
So this, the report on your investigation goes to the city council, but is it possible, or has it occurred, that there's a violation of the law?
We wouldn't make any determination about that.
No, but I mean, has that happened?
Not that I'm aware of, okay. No. And I'm not aware that we've ever made a determination that there was a likely violation of the ethics code. We've had complaints, and issued opinion, we publish a determination that it did not violate the ethics code. But we have not, at least as long as I've been around, we have not, and as long as in the history that I'm aware of, we have not said to the council, we think this is a violation of the ethics code. Yes, sir.
Is there a step short of filing a complaint to find out? If you have a question about some activity?
You bet. There's a couple of things that we can you can ask for. You can ask for a advisory opinion on an issue. If you think, this might be a violation of the ethics code, before I do it, I'd like to find out for sure. You can request that we issue an advisory opinion on that.
Could that be
topic.
More, like almost anonymous? Like, I've got these friends who are on a board and they're thinking they could do this. May they? Or do you have to say,
I don't know.
I saw Joe and Sally and Steve at lunch.
The rules on advisory opinion are pretty broad, so I suppose you could request a hypothetical situation and have us give an opinion about that. We haven't been asked to write an advisory opinion since I've been on the board. The other thing you can ask for is a waiver of some of the things that you're not allowed to do. You could ask for a waiver of the confidentiality rules or a waiver of the conflict of interest rules for a particular purpose. And we would look at that and could potentially grant a waiver. It's also never been asked for as long as I've been on the board.
But hypothetically, that could be something like, there's a gift involved, and you want a waiver because it has some noble purpose or
exactly.
Useful purpose.
Sure.
It's sort of not that big a deal, but...
You've been on the board for 20 years, and you're going to step down, and everybody wants to get together and buy you
Or a committee member works for a firm that's doing a consulting project with the city, And you wonder whether that's a potential conflict
of interest. Yeah. That's a perfect thing for an advisory opinion, as opposed to just assume it's fine and then get a complaint about it. If we decide that we don't think there has been any violation, we also write that up and it gets published and posted on our website, and we tell that to City Council.
The risk of, you know, the grand jurors and so on are around to protect people from, loaded charges of that you've done something that might harm their reputation when somebody confidentially can look into it. So is there some risk in which you do that these things haven't been published? And has that been the case where somebody makes their chronic complainer, so it has an effect of damaging somebody's reputation without ever having the complaint itself be sustained.
Well, so I think that that's part of the reason why the complaint itself has to be made public and the complainer has to be named, and we have to publish a response to every complaint so that if it is an unfounded complaint or just that the complainant can point to that and say, see, they looked into it and there was nothing.
The subject of the complaint. Not
the complainant.
The complainant.
They would be looking
the complainer.
At the complaint.
So does the complainant get any kind of slap on the wrist for doing that?
No, because you want the public to, that would be against public policy.
Right, because you want you don't want to discourage the public from complaining.
I can't figure out a way to make the law distinguish between reasonable people and unreasonable people.
That's right. No, that's unfortunately. That's the problem.
All right, anything else you have?
I think that's it. If you have no other questions for me.
Yes, seriously.
Anybody?
Thank you. Hey, thank you.
All right. We have not done item 5.
Yep.
Oh, that one.
Nice meeting you. Happy night.
Thank you.
I haven't talked to anybody about this, so I don't know what people want to do.
I
haven't seen one stump speech.
Someone,
yet.
I think
Rashawn is volunteering to be the committee chair.
Oh, yes. Say we swap council seat for
him. Oh, yeah. Oh, that looks digestible.
Question is whether somebody else wants to take a turn.
Yeah, do I need to raise $10,000? I could just trade.
Are you too happy with this current position?
We like you guys as a pair.
Are you sharing the duties equally? Is it easier on Andy now that Jeff
is? Definitely easier.
Thank God there's no term limits.
Can we have the odd couple continue? Or?
It's definitely easier having Jeff.
Is it? Okay. And Jeff, how do you feel about that?
I wouldn't do it without Andy.
This is not a permanent thing.
I move we retain our current chairs until this issue comes up again.
I second.
We could bring it up next meeting.
I second.
Well,
that.
No, when it's required to be brought
it's
up.
Required to do it annually. Oh. This is
okay.
It'll come around.
Can I move that we vote to have them realize?
Sure.
Well, first, are they voting?
They both said they were.
Oh, okay.
They haven't started
Neither of us will do it on our own.
On our own. But together, you're splitting the duties a little bit, which is better.
We are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's working really well.
Really, if somebody else wants to, I think we ought to. Mm-hmm.
Look I don't see anybody. This is a group with a huge ego and a lot of ambition, but
we're just gonna
this doesn't seem to be
the
target. We're going to do more subcommittees. Actually, it's been very helpful from my perspective. There are several of you do a lot more of those we're doing going. That's been great. Okay, so you have made a motion.
Second.
This motion is that Jeff will be co-chair for another year. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Passes.
But
all right, geez, we're out of here 10 minutes early.
But I do want to thank you both for it. I mean, I think
good job.
Yes.
Yeah, well, yeah,
you put a lot of thought into what is worthy of discussion and how to keep us organized. Mm-hmm. And it's clear.
Well, I don't think everybody would want them to continue if you were causing, discord. But the fact is, you're creating accord.
This is actually a really fun community.
It is.
Fun.
It's congenial.
It's a congenial.
Whenever you run the general public off with spreadsheets.
Nice to have meetings that actually end.
Yeah.
I've been on committees where.
I said that's probably because you sat in your tent for 2 days.
They don't end at 7, as promised.
Yep.
I can't take her up on her offer. Wrong word.
Hasta la vista.
Good to see everybody. She's going to be fine.
Bye, Henry.
I do.
Alright.
I still.
City Hall is happening tonight.
As always.
Grab your cookie and run.
Go to the room that had more outrage than this one.
I got my own cookie. I'm good.
It would be nice to say goodbye to Doug.
They're doing.
I haven't seen him.
Safe Streets or something.
It's the bond. It's the bond.
It's the bond. Yeah. It's big.
So
it's a lot of money.
Speed limit thing. I think it's like a done deal already.
When I was here, I think it was 55 miles an hour on Blakely.
55 on that one.
No, on Blakely.
40 on Uber Harbor, yeah.
Yeah.
25.
Then a guy flipped his car over the middle of the
day. I know. Yeah. People were upset by that. And I don't know why there wasn't any more discussion about it. I had a lot of people that I knew that I fortunately don't have to go by there on the way to my ferry. But people are upset when you go with the speed limit that much unnecessarily.
I just can't wait
for a roundabout at Dale Road. I think that's exciting.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be great.
Oh, my gosh, the backup from Dale Road, that light.
I think it's a great solution to doing that.
It works great.
I'd rather see that happen than
the three or four more to get
Yeah, leave the speed limit at 30 and put in more signs.
Nobody's written that.
Does it have to keep going? I never wanted to come. I didn't want to answer. shape of it at all.